We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt, joining me as always over there. This time in beautiful Southern California, my man, Dan Rubenstein, right back where it all started, sir. How are you?
I'm great. I'm in the Clawfish West Coast, Ty.
Yeah?
I went from the walk-in closet in my apartment. That's right. I have a walk-in closet. To a walk-in closet in my parents' house. So I'm surrounded by my parents' clothing, but hopefully the audio sounds all right as we get into April Q&A / a little exercise we have.
That's what we're doing, Dan, as you know.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail on the Solid
Verbal. We've had that sound around since the very beginning, but what we do in the off season, about once a month, we like to pay homage to those of you who write in at solidverbal@gmail.com, who post on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, on the subreddit, on, gosh, where the MySpace page, the Friendster account, wherever you can get a hold of us. We do our best to collect all of those questions, put them in a nice little Google Doc here, which I did not open literally until about 4 minutes ago. Then
good.
We just work
fresh
it all
eyes.
Out, Dan. We just work it all out here.
Yeah.
As we always do on the show.
I like that when we put out a call for questions and say, hey, throw us your college football questions or really anything that's on your mind. We start getting a bunch of questions in our inbox that are like, hey, my belly button color is getting kind of weird and gunk filled.
Sure.
And at what point should I speak to a professional? Also, how much do you see Nebraska improving on special teams this year? And I love that that's the case. So I've set up both a document full of what appears to be a lot of life questions and a couple football ones. And then also an exercise in the realm of expectations.
The realm of expectations. Why don't we start there? So by the way, again, thank you to everyone who wrote in. I'm going through these now. Again, real time. Mm-hmm. Have not had much a chance to prepare. There are some fantastic questions, as always.
Yeah.
What, we got six pages of questions here?
Yeah, we got a lot. There's a bunch that came in not that long a time. And should also point out, The solid baby flying 6 hours across the country surpassed expectations.
Exactly.
Takeoffs, landings, no ear issues, slept for like 3.5 hours, ate, smiled at the flight attendants, which, hey, good job, buddy.
He's better than me.
Yeah, way better than you.
So let's start with expectations. You are in your old digs here, podcasting digs out in California. I am not at Mama H's house where it all started for me. But why don't we delve into some expectations. So you put this together. We had the Marie Kondo thing last week, and we got questions about that. Seems like that went over pretty well.
People liked it.
Yeah, you want to delve back into expectations, though, Dan, a hot topic here in the college football offseason. Every time we've ever done an offseason show, it seems like we harken back to some form of expectations for the season that lies ahead.
And by the way, we didn't get to a lot of those Marie Kondo items that either were worth giving away or sparking joy. I'm particularly upset that I didn't make a decision about the well-worn, caricature-filled, what was it, the ACC Coastal shirt.
Right.
With like the character, the giant heads, like, you know, when the Detroit Pistons won the NBA championship, you had, they're all spinning balls on their hands, just with the sort of throwbacky success of that division. I'm sad I didn't make a decision with that, but people seem to like that. But as it relates to expectations, I went through the Power Six conferences. That's right, Ty. Power Six.
Okay. Being inclusive. And very nice.
I sought, I think is actually the form of that word. I sought out the growers and the lowers, so not growers and showers. So the teams that grew in 2018 and the teams that sort of lowered their Q rating or what we can expect from this team. And we saw sort of a lowering of performance. I went through each conference and decided which teams fit those two things. And I think we should go in and help to categorize, based on the movement of 2018, whether we feel these teams should be classified now, given how they're currently built, and I'm excluding teams that hired new coaches, because we just don't have the data points. So these teams, are they just not a bowl team? Sorry, it's just, it's hard to see a way that you're getting to six. Are they the annual will they, won't they, 5-5, 5-6, playing for eligibility, the Ross Rachel of college football, like sort of Virginia Tech was this past year?
Okay. Right.
Are they perennial bowl? Like, they're getting a 7. They're at 7, maybe they'll win 8, maybe they'll win 6, but they're a pretty healthy 7 bet. Are they a comfortable bowl team with, you know, some years they're going to go 6-6, 5-7, and that's just a standard deviation. And some years when everything breaks right and the quarterback's better than expected, the coaches are up-and-coming growers themselves, maybe they get to 10 with a couple of big breaks, but comfortably 8.
So this is essentially perception versus reality.
Correct.
With some of these programs. So why don't we start with USC, because I know USC is on here.
And so forth, 9, 10, 11 plus,
Yeah, USC should be a 10 plus win team.
Lower in the Pac-12.
That would be my perception of what USC should be. What they will be, though, I think is really the open question. That's a big part of the reason why Clay Helton remains ever on the hot seat, has been the last 2 years, certainly is going to be from day one this season, because if USC doesn't get to like at least 9, right? Like,
right.
At that point, it feels like they're falling way short of what they should be.
Give me your take, Ty. You say they should be a 10 plus win team, or 10 plus win program, excuse me. So if you combine what they've been in the last 5 or so years, which is on the high end, a Pac-12 champion, on the low end, not making a bowl game.
Right.
And you look at the talent that they've been able to bring in, develop, you know, either get drafted or not get drafted to the NFL, coaches, available talent, conference, division, whatever. What is the biggest reason that you see as USC being 10 plus, anything less than that is disappointing? Is it a talent thing? Is it that the Pac-12 is down thing? Is it that they're just so far ahead in terms of infrastructure, whatever it is? What is it that, because this is something that like I think I agree with, but then I keep seeing USC seasons and coaches and bad presidents and athletic directors. And like, I don't know if USC can ever really consistently get out of its own way unless they have a high NFL level coach like they did in Pete Carroll.
Well, it's certainly a consistency thing on some level, you know, because they constantly get the talent. Mm-hmm. And perhaps under Clay Helton, they haven't been as good at developing that talent as they should be, but they still get it. Which leads me to believe that on some level, it's a coaching thing. how are they not more consistent of a program at this point? They've had their struggles along the offensive line over the last couple of years. They've had some struggles along the defensive line over the last couple of years. It seems like at any given point in time, a certain element of that team is not firing on all cylinders. Skill talent does not seem to be an issue. They seem to be fine there, but it's the little things that they need to be more consistent in that I think can get them to a higher level.
I am. What are the ratings, the stock ratings, whatever, bond ratings, like Standard & Poor's and Moody's and stuff like that?
Right. You've got to.
Maybe this is the actual theme of the show. Right. We're like upgrading or docking, whatever.
Well, listen.
I think U.S.
Because the show last week, Tidying Up, was such a big hit, we could right now declare it a mixed metaphor May. And go into investments
in April.
We could declare it now, give ourselves enough runway to figure it out, and then do a whole investment themed show sometime in May where we do that kind of
content. Did a Mad Money episode that got a little out of hand and got kind of manic.
We could do better than that, and I've just come up with an idea that we can roll with. But to your point, sure, a rating, essentially a trust rating, is what you're talking about here with USC.
I have USC in my mind as someday they should be a 10-plus win program. They have enough advantages, and the conference is not robust enough to consistently challenge them week in and week out, but they should be a 10-plus win program. I am downgrading them to 9-plus. I am downgrading them to full-on good. They're going to mostly lose to teams that are on the same level and maybe throw in one just definitely disappointing loss.
And why?
I'm at that point with USC because when I look at them, I see them as a gym hobbyist entering local weightlifting competitions. We're like, yeah, you're doing well, and maybe you're wearing clothing that you shouldn't, like you're showing off guns that aren't fully there, but just know what's going on, know the reality. And USC, to me, with administrative and coaching hires, it doesn't look like they're fully dedicated to the ruthlessness needed to get to that 10-plus level. And I don't know why that is, but it's hard to look at USC and think, this is a well-oiled machine, and that winning 10-plus games a year is hard. As everybody outside of like Bama, Clemson, Ohio State knows, that's a really difficult mountain. And I see no evidence that USC has put anything in place right now over the next 3, 4, 5, whatever years to say, this is where they stand. They're a 10-plus win program. Maybe if there's an overhaul, but I don't know, again, the data point to point to right now that says, yeah, they should stumble into 10 wins no matter what.
All right, so let me go to another team then.
Yeah.
With that logic, how do you feel about the Michigan Wolverines?
I feel a lot better about Michigan.
Because there's a little bit of overlap, right?
There's a little bit of overlap, and I like that the, you know, included in that overlap is going a definite new direction offensively with Michigan hiring Josh Gattis and USC hiring Graham Harrell. But right now, Michigan is at least on an uptick. They go from going 5-4, what was it in the Big Ten 2 years ago, something like that, to 8-1 last year. The defense, there's nothing about USC that you can point to as being incredible. And for 90% of Michigan season, their defense was incredible. They dominated team in a specific facet of the game. And so with Michigan, they don't schedule up all the time. I know Notre Dame is sort of back on the schedule, whereas USC has had, you know, Texas and Stanford early on in the season and, you know, a number of huge Power Five programs, whereas Michigan is sort of up and down in terms of what they've scheduled. Michigan has been excellent at something. And there has been consistent competence with Michigan that I don't see with USC. So in terms of trends, even with some offensive questions, I think you have to put Michigan above USC and saying, I understand why they're a 10-plus win program right now, because there is excellence associated with where they stand right now.
Well, and there's a lot that you can fall back on in the Michigan case.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Jim Harbaugh is definitively a better coach than Clay Helton. You put the two coaches in a room, compare resumes, no one is taking Helton over Harbaugh. So that's the first thing. Second,
I don't have Michigan at 11, though.
Right. Well, secondly, you've got the defense, as you said. The offense has sort of been a work in progress. Jim Harbaugh is trying to address that. They've got plenty of talent. That's not an issue. Look at their recruiting class this past year.
For sure.
Recruiting class was demonstrably better than USC's. So you got that mm-hmm. as well. I just feel like Michigan's in a much better place, and they're going to continue this slow ascent up. Perhaps there's a bit of a void now with Ryan Day taking over for Urban Meyer. I don't care how good he is. He's not Urban Meyer. I think that's an opportunity for Michigan. I feel, as you do, a lot better about the Wolverines than I do the Trojans at this point.
I also think, by the way, as for consistency, if Clay Helton is fired and Jim Harbaugh decides, yeah, I'm going to take the Lions job, or I don't even know what NFL job would be attractive to him, I think there is a better chance that Michigan makes the right hire to at least flirt with where they've been, or at least where they were in 2018, than I do about USC doing it. Both because of location and because of the administrative dedication
You, who always argues the merits of good weather, you're going to tell me that Michigan's a better location than Southern California.
It's a better location for attracting excellent coaches. Yes.
Okay.
I think an excellent coach is more likely to take the Michigan job than the USC job. I'm only comparing those two schools. Yes.
I don't know if I buy that, man.
Really?
I don't know if I buy that. No. USC still has that glitz and glamour to it, even though they've been down for a bit.
At what point are you going to say, Ezra, I don't know about the glitz and glamour anymore? When are we going to get to that point where you're going to, like, are you going to be the, as we mentioned in the Marie Kondo show, wearing the USC cologne that smells like a sweaty Brian Cushing? Are you going to keep pointing to Pete Carroll?
I did throw that out, and I'm still picking up hints of it on my clothing.
Fair. Next team.
Let's stay in the Big Ten.
Okay.
Let's talk about Wisconsin. Where are we at with Wisconsin right now? The Alex Hornibrook thing admittedly came out of thin air for me.
Yeah.
Maybe that had been percolating for a while. Apparently it was. But for him to leave, granted, not the strongest armed quarterback, maybe not the most accurate, but seemed to fit that system pretty well. Where are we at with Wisconsin?
Wisconsin's confusing. We're now, Paul Chris has been there 4 years and just hit a pretty huge stumbling block after year three. And there are reasons for it with quarterback injuries and injuries all over the field, really, but not necessarily a Big Ten that is lining up huge challengers week in and week out, especially in that division. And so I think I'm also downgrading Wisconsin a little bit. I'm not fully panicking. They went, 8-5 last year, 7-5 during the regular season. And 7 wins is certainly a departure from where they were, but they won 10-9 and 11-1? Or I guess they went 12-0 in 2017. So I think they are almost in that 9 full-on good team that they're going to lose to teams that have more talent. They're going to be in those games, but I'm worried about more BYU-type games as we go further into the Paul Chryst era, where they look pretty good, but they give up 3.5 really dumb plays. And I don't know if it's a Jim Leonard thing on defense. I don't know if it's a not evolving enough on offense and leaning on their sort of power brand too much, but I'm a little bit worried that they are taking an understandable but disappointing half step back.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's 9 wins with the ability to go 10-2 with a break, and the ability to go 7-5 if it's a nightmare again.
Yeah, I'm real curious to see what ends up happening at the quarterback spot. It doesn't concern me as much at Wisconsin the way it would at other schools because they do have that power attack that they do rely on. But they get Michigan relatively early this year, towards the middle to late portion of September, which will be a big test for them. They're on the road later in the year at Ohio State. They're on the road later in the year against a team like a Nebraska, who knows what shape they'll be in.
Sure.
I'm not sure what to expect out of this Wisconsin team now. The schedule isn't terrible, to be honest. I think they can navigate this, but there are some questions, and they do need to improve over where they were a year ago. So I think I sort of fall in line with you. Around the 9 win mark feels about right to me.
Important to remember that outside of Illinois, each of the teams in the West, you have to upgrade in terms of where they stand competitively. Northwestern has been a stalwart of consistency, even with Wisconsin taking a step back. Purdue, for sure, has gotten better. Iowa, even though they seem to go 5-4, 4-5, whatever in the Big Ten every year, they're still a tough, tough out. Nebraska's on the upshot and on the upswing, and Minnesota is a team that is certainly getting more dangerous. And there is a small part of me that's worried that Wisconsin built up that 10-11 annual win season threshold on a foundation of, well, a Big Ten West is kind of bad, so a pretty good team might look excellent.
All right, final one here, then we're going to get to questions. Where do we stand on the Auburn Tigers?
That's a good one. And
talk about trying to time the stock market.
Yeah.
Just when you think you know what Auburn's going to do, just when you think they're a 7-win team, they go out and they win 10, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. It's a really tough program to try and gauge. We talked about it on the Tidying Up show, our Gus Malzahn hourglass.
Mm-hmm.
Still sparks joy, I think, for both of us.
Yeah.
Trying to figure this thing out. But where are we at with Auburn now?
Auburn is if you were going to invest in Auburn football, you have to know what, you know, you could buy it at $3.85 a share. And now, oh, wow, it's up to $9 right now. Like, oh, it's down to 76 cents. What is happening? Auburn is, it's as if Enron were going through all of their issues. And then right as they're going bankrupt, everybody's going to jail, they discover a clean renewable energy source to power everything on the cheap. Like, what? Who are you, Auburn? Auburn should be a 10 plus win program. And I say that knowing that they're in the SEC West, which is certainly in most years a difficult division to navigate. But given their brand and that they've been in and won national championships within the last decade, I am thinking that they are 10 plus with Gus Malzahn, or should be 10 plus with Gus Malzahn, given his offensive reputation, considering who they've developed on defense, and considering that they're one of what, like 2.5 programs that can challenge Alabama annually, that should be able to challenge Alabama annually. So I am looking at them as 10 plus with a whole bunch of volatility. And I know that sort of gives them assigns them two sort of expectation points, but I don't know how you can do anything different with Auburn.
I think I'm in agreement with you there.
I'm much more confident in staking a claim that Auburn should be that than USC should be that.
I think I agree with that. Yeah.
I mean, where do you stand on them?
8-5 last year, 3-5 in conference. Did not go according to plans. I think we were both higher on Auburn than they ended up finishing throughout the course of the year. Now they lose Stidham. And I've got questions, but this is the kind of year where they win 10 games, isn't it? It seems like it's every other year with the Auburn Tigers.
Sure.
So I think I'm in agreement with you. By the way, this sparked not just joy, but
joy.
The idea of the show that we're going to do in May with investing. I have a great idea for how we're going to run this thing.
I will lean on Jody with an eye heavily.
Okay. I'm in agreement with you, generally speaking. Auburn's still got a ton of talent. They're in a tough side of the SEC, though. That's what makes this whole thing harder. That's sort of the great X factor. There's just so much competition on that side.
And they
side.
Schedule well. Auburn is a team that schedules well. They recently had Clemson in the non-conference part of the schedule. They play, well, they had Washington last year. I think they have Oregon this year. I know they have Oregon this year in Arlington. So in terms of wrenches into that 10-plus number, they certainly are trying to, much like in dodgeball, they're trying to avoid those wrenches being thrown at them constantly, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. What was that? Patches O'Houlihan?
Yeah.
Okay. Which feels like a pretty apt comparison for Auburn. But yeah, I think you're right. I think there's nothing wrong with expecting a lot of Auburn with as much tumultuousness that surrounds the program. They are one of the few teams that at their peak can play with anybody in the Gus Malzahn era.
All right. Well, Daniel, shall we get to some of our questions here that were sent in by some of our loyal Verballers?
You wouldn't even do any American Conference teams, though.
We're running out of
big
time
deal
here.
Of the Power
we got,
Six.
We got
I know.
Questions, man.
All right. Let's just do speed round.
Give me
a number.
Couple quick ones. Go ahead.
Okay. Syracuse. They grew last year. What's their number?
They're
I have them as an 8.
They're like an 8-win team, yeah.
Virginia Tech, the lower in the ACC.
I trust in Justin Fuente. I'll say 9.
Boo. and 10.
Nine.
Nine.
Yeah.
I have them at 8 as well for Syracuse. It's the ACC. Everybody's right. Everybody mushes together in a stew. Texas.
Texas is a big grower. Is a 10.
10. I think you're right. Oh, yeah. It's weird to say it, but I think you're right. Oklahoma State, a big lower. They go 3-6 in conference last year.
8 or 9.
I have them as 8.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what they do with their new offensive coordinator. Did a lot of great things at Princeton.
Yeah.
Cincinnati. A lot of people said a year ahead of schedule last year with how good they were, especially on
really
defense.
Really good. Really good on defense. 9 or 10? Does that seem fair?
Yeah. I think 10 with as much talent as there is in Ohio. Yeah, in that general area and Luke Fickell's connections. My worry about 10, where I may downgrade them to 9, is how long is Luke Fickell actually a Bearcat?
Okay, sure.
Because I think he's a name that's going to continue to come up. Navy, a huge lower year, which obviously much to the joy of the Hildenbrand family.
I don't know.
I think I have him at about 7.
Yeah, I
think there's some issues
there.
7 or 8. Kenny Matalolo's looking around too much. It feels like his name is coming up too much. Kentucky.
You know what? I took a beating. We took a beating for how we handled Kentucky.
Yeah.
And so my natural proclivity would be to say 0 here, just to rub it in a little more. But let's be bullish on Kentucky moving forward. They had a hell of a year. They really did.
They did.
Perhaps we didn't give them enough credit.
I think I'm at 7-ish, but with a pop. With like the, if they have Ron Baker and Fred VanVleet, Wichita State, you know, they have those like fourth, fifth year seniors. They're going to be hard to beat. And I think that's what that team was last year, having as much upperclassmen experience as they did. I think they're 7 with a couple of breaks, 9+. But I have them as comfortable bowl team, which is with where they've been. I think everybody remembers certain recent eras. That's pretty good. Final team, roll on you Bears, Cal Bears.
I'm down on Cal.
You're down on Cal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have a weird infrastructure thing. Not a lot of money running through Berkeley. They're having a lot of financial issues. So the dedication to football is, I mean, they've added facilities and they've, you know, Justin Wilcox, I think, is really good.
I have
do
never
something very well.
Recovered from the fact that I spent an entire offseason championing the Bauer Hour and then they pulled him.
That was a rough offseason.
After like one game. Yeah.
Yeah. I have them as Ross Rachel. I have them as annual bowl flirtation, and maybe they're getting to a bowl 65% of the time.
Yeah.
It's tough without seeing some big step on offense to feel good about them in the next 5 years.
Let's move on to questions here, Dave.
Questions!
One in front of me that I'm looking at that I love.
Oh.
This one from Anna. Last week, you got rid of things you no longer wanted, things that didn't spark joy.
Yeah.
With all that new space you've acquired, what are you most excited to add to the Solid Verbal house this year, Dan? We got room. We can expand. We can create new memories. We can add new keepsakes here to the mantle.
By the way, if you're only interested in football, this is when. Thanks for the download.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us. And you can go hang out with another podcast if you don't want to hear our dumb thoughts about life. Anna or Anna asks a terrific question. I am not going to be adding much other than baby toys
right.
to my kind of small apartment. But you, on the other hand, have acquired space.
I have.
What is something that Solid Wife Kate isn't necessarily thrilled with you doing space-wise, but says, you know what? We have the square footage.
Right.
Go for it, Ty. I know this will make you happy and spark joy.
Yeah.
I'm cool with it.
I've already got this figured out, Dan. I'm getting a fat head photo. Did you see today that the National Science Foundation or Institute, whatever it's called, they somehow managed to photograph a black hole?
Mm-hmm, I did.
It's a huge deal. And you know how I've got this thing for outer space.
Uh-oh, I know where you're going with this.
Yeah,
I'm going to get... with Schmeliscope?
Yeah, no, I'm going to get the framed photo of that black hole.
Oh, okay.
I want to get it fathead style so I can put it up here on the wall of the studio. And I think it's actually got a double meaning because it looks a whole lot like Florida State's quarterback depth chart.
Oh,
so I think it really has a double meaning added value for us here as a podcast.
Yeah, that's, oh, you went there. I can tell you what I would do with more space. At some point, I will have more space because I will not be living in Brooklyn. I think I'm going to, I got talked into this a little bit by a friend last week who just got a place, and they're going to get a Japanese soaking tub.
Okay.
Which it actually looks like a sake glass. It is a tall tub, and I am not a bath person, but it is like a fully submerged thing other than your head, and you sort of sit on a small bench in it.
Okay.
And it's apparently incredibly relaxing. And now I can be talked into having like a Zen bathroom situation.
Zen bathroom
a Japanese soaking tub as the centerpiece.
All right, let's go.
Yep. Next.
To Eric, he says, what are the various / most creative ways Bagman can get money to players? Controversial subject.
Ooh.
Here.
This was asked of us on our last Q&A. We're just getting around to it now because we've been getting a bunch of good questions.
Speak creatively to me, Dan.
Well, so there are existing ways that are pretty creative. Instead of just players getting handed envelopes full of cash or, you know, a bagman or an extra assertive booster paying for car repairs or whatever expenses a player may incur as a senior or junior in high school, whatever. A lot of stuff like this is going through charities.
Right.
Like a 7-on-7 coach starts a charity. And that charity is to help kids travel to tournaments and get tutoring. And then all of a sudden they get an infusion of $50,000 from an LLC, something like that. I think that's pretty creative. I think that's, I mean, in terms of going skirting some rules, I think it's pretty creative. I mean, I would just continue to hire relatives in a cash business. Like if a player's relative runs a landscaping service, and you're obviously now familiar with all this with your whatever you're doing in your backyard.
That's right. Yeah.
If you're like, all right, I really want, we're putting in a patio situation with this deck and this bar setup and fire pit, and it's going to run us, you know, $5,100. All of a sudden, you're like, what if I paid you $20,000 and sat you down for a spiel, like a time-sharing type spiel about the virtues of Notre Dame football for anybody that might be in your life considering Notre Dame. That kind of thing.
Okay.
Cash business.
Cash business. Yeah.
Cash businesses where it wouldn't look super, I mean, spending $5,000 in cash on a patio would be weird, but something where it wouldn't raise eyebrows that you're paying for something in cash and getting and have a lot of cash on hand because of the business you're running.
I'm gonna have to think more about this, but I like the
boat
the cut
tours.
Of your jib here.
Yeah, setting up a business like that where, like, yeah, of course people are paying in cash. A sandwich shop. We're like, gosh, turkey, salami, mortadella, and how much is that? $800. Okay, cool. Yeah, no problem. Cash. Businesses.
Yeah, that feels great, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know what else feels great, Dan? How about paying off high-interest credit cards?
Oh,
wow. Getting a lower rate and saving money. That was the best transition I've ever had.
Not bad.
Refinance your credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from our friends over at Lightstream. Get a fixed rate as low as 6.14% APR with auto pay and get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 with no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Plus, Lightstream is a division of SunTrust Bank, one of the nation's largest financial institutions. So you have complete peace of mind. If you want to save even more, our listeners can get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get it, though, is to go to lightstream.com/solid. That is lightstream.com/solid. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/solid for more information, Dan.
I love it, Ty. Thank you for that statement.
Where are we going next?
We had a question about grief.
Grief?
Did you see the question about grief in the document?
No.
So I believe it's Armados from Reddit. He is bummed out that the AAF, the Association, is that what it is, of American Football?
Yeah.
Is no longer, it appears. They have discontinued
couldn't
their football
couldn't make payroll
products.
After like 3 weeks, huh?
Yeah.
That's
not,
tough.
Not great business-wise.
No.
What's your favorite stage of grief? He is particular to bargaining, and he's half tempted to see if he can do a GoFundMe or a Kickstarter to start a new spring football league. And I have this in front of me, the standard stages of grief, but I think we can invent our own stages. They include denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And so, as I'm sure you've had to grieve people or situations, you watch the Notre Dame bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
What is the point in grief? I can tell you from just a breakup perspective, a relationship ending perspective, what my favorite part of that grief period is.
It's weird to have a favorite part of the grief cycle.
I know. I'm with you.
Yeah.
I love the part where I was like, I just need to get outside. I need to get outside and I'm just going to run 5 miles. And it didn't last for a long time getting up early and going for a run to just clear your head. But I did like that stage felt good. It felt good to sort of clear your mind a little bit, clear my mind a little bit. So that's what I would point to. And then just listening to a lot of Saves the Day.
Yeah. I'm big on denial because it's sort of like it didn't happen.
I'm fine. No, I don't. What are you talking about? Life is great.
Yeah. Yeah,
your voice denial, getting higher.
The denial stage is sort of like the honeymoon stage of the grief cycle.
Yes.
So denial's I think I'm a little partial to that.
Okay. Next question. Oh, I like this one, Ty. I think you'll have, and we've gotten this question sort of before. Let me find it. I think it was about which rec league to join. Matt wants to say, I'm moving to a new state after graduation. So this sounds like he's probably early 20s, maybe mid 20s if it's after grad school. New state where he doesn't know anyone.
Yeah.
What kind of rec league, kickball, soccer, etc., would have the most fun people? Making friends, watching games, you know, going out for drinks, maybe being set up with somebody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you were alternate universe.
Sure.
You're a single guy. Mysterious day job says, all right, Ty, you are moving to Kansas City.
Yeah.
Which is an area I don't believe you know many people.
Nope. Nobody.
And you're saying, well, I love playing sports, love being active. I'm going to join something, meet some new people, maybe come across somebody that could be interesting to go on a couple dates with.
All right. So I have some thoughts on this matter, Dan.
Kansas City. Fun town.
You and I are both very competitive people.
Correct.
And I have a problem when I play a sport that I think I'm pretty good at, like softball or baseball. Something right. that I've got a lot of familiarity with.
Yep.
When I get out there on the baseball diamond, it really pains me deeply. It wounds me if I'm playing with a bunch of people who don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, then you're going to come off terribly.
Then I'm going to come off as sort of like the super intense guy who maybe doesn't make friends as easily as I would otherwise.
Oh, weird. We didn't tell you that we were going out to beers after the game. Oops.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not wearing rec specs to the game. I'm not quite at that level, but I'm a little too intense.
You do see the intensity, yeah.
Maybe I'm not as open to meeting new people as I should be because I'm focused on the game, a game
right.
that I know.
And it's hard. It's hard for people to be into intense tie.
That's right. So I think with that as the backdrop, it needs to be something that, you know, maybe I don't take as seriously. Or I'm not as prone to taking it seriously. So if there is like a kickball league or a dodgeball league or something
I don't know.
Something a little bit offbeat.
I still think kickball would scratch you where you itch a little bit too much because you're still on the diamond. There's still a shortstop.
Yeah.
There's still a pitcher.
Right, right.
They're still waving somebody home.
It also couldn't be something like bowling where I'm just genuinely awful.
But that's kind of cool. That's you know, there's time between to like get to know people and talk and find out where people are from and what they do for a living. And there's that, you know, you're drinking beer. I think bowling is actually a great idea.
Nah, I'm out on the bowling.
But it's tough to just join a bowling league blind. I think you have to join with like three other people.
I want
right?
to be outside.
It's a team. I think that's good. I think kickball for you is bad. I think soccer for you would be good.
Soccer's something I know a lot about, but have never played.
It doesn't involve your bum shoulder.
True.
So you just sort of beg off of throw-ins. I get throw-ins will be fine for you. I think soccer is the move for you. Or basketball. But you want to be outside.
I'm retired from basketball.
Are you really?
I blew out my shoulder playing basketball. I'm retired.
But you're not dunking.
I'm retired.
Okay. I think soccer is the answer for you specifically. For him, I think kickball is a great answer.
Yeah.
Kickball is something that inherently, if as long as Matt doesn't have the type of baseball or softball intensity that you have,
right.
I think kickball is silly enough that it brings out personality, where it's just like, oh, we're playing this thing we did when we were in PE in fourth grade. And I think there's a natural like shift from kickball to a bar after, even if you're not a big drinker, grab some nachos, grab some tendos, whatever. That I think there's that social element to kickball where people are just letting their guard down. They're just a little bit looser. So I would say kickball.
I like that.
And you can talk to people. It's like if you're playing Ultimate Frisbee, if you're in an Ultimate Frisbee rec league, it's not like you're chatting around the field, getting to know people. But if you're in a dugout, if you're in an outfield waiting between innings for kickball, everybody knows they're into this sort of ridiculous fun thing. I say kickball.
Next question. Let's go to Mike here.
All right.
He says, my birthday is Sunday the 14th, and my wife of 1 month, congratulations, sir.
Ooh, very nice.
Has told me that her gift to me is a ticket / weekend to any game for our alma mater, the University of Arkansas.
Ooh, big Zoe.
What game of the 2019 schedule gives me the best weekend experience, as well as a game where Arkansas has a decent shot of winning? Thanks. That is from Mike.
First I think those off, are two different things, though.
Exactly. Congratulations, Mike. Those are two different things. And I think you need to look at this more from the standpoint of experience than from shot of winning.
So who are you penciling in?
All right. So the first game that jumps off the page to me, Dan, is that A&M game. However, that's a neutral siter.
It is. It's in Arlington.
You know where we stand on neutral site games.
Yeah, but at least that game's usually entertaining. It's been an overtime game of, you know, more often than not in the last few years.
I don't know. If you're into neutral site games, Arlington could be an
option. You got to go to a game. Yeah, go to a game in Arkansas.
The Auburn game midway through October is interesting to me.
Sure.
Otherwise, though, there aren't a lot of high-profile home games that I would really steer towards. Maybe Mississippi State could be interesting. The Missouri game end of the year could be interesting, but the weather could be a bit of a concern.
Right, exactly.
I'm probably going for that Auburn game.
I think Auburn's the answer, and a couple reasons. You give yourself, what, six games going in. They're going to have a new quarterback, and this is year two of the Chad Morris era. And at times, the defense looked all right. At times last year, it certainly had some issues. But at least with Auburn, you have that sort of big game intensity where you're not positive they're terrible unless if they lose to San Jose State, that's going to be a rough ticket to look at. But at that point, there's a shot at beating Ole Miss, a shot in terms of what their schedule looks like. They should beat Portland State. Colorado State and San Jose State are not world beaters. A&M is going to be very tough, but at least that's a neutral site, and they've played them very close in recent years. Kentucky's not going to be as good, so there is at least a chance that Arkansas is competitive on the road in Lexington. Auburn, you get, in terms of tailgating, that's a big game atmosphere. Even if everybody at the tailgate knows, yeah, we're probably going to lose, and it's probably not going to be super pretty. There's a buzz. You at least get that buzz where it's just like, it's October, it's the South, it's Arkansas, Auburn. There's just something about it that at least for 3-4 hours tailgating, you're like, this is what life is about.
Exactly.
We're grilling meats, we're smoking meats, we're doing whatever. And it's just, you get to enjoy that brief window, even with the pessimism laying in the back of your mind, the brief window of like, life is good. If you can like sort of float 10 feet above your tailgate, you can really appreciate it. Whereas Mississippi State, you're into November, then it's cold and you're wearing, I don't know how cold it actually gets in Fayetteville in November, but it's probably not as nice as it is in mid-October. So there's at least potential for hope with Auburn coming off of neutral site, a worse Kentucky game, a worse Ole Miss team potentially with all sorts of issues. I think that's the answer. I think we're in agreement there.
All right. Pick
And Auburn could be terrible. Auburn could always be terrible.
Pick a game where you think the atmosphere is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the wins and losses. That'd be my recommendation. Let's go to Bizarro Tyler, an all-time verballer. Shares a namesake with yours truly.
Of course.
Now that y'all are in your mid to late 30s, married, don't have near the amount of free time you used to, when did you realize you were out of touch with current music?
Oh, man.
Sometimes I'll listen to Pop 2K Sirius XM, and I'll have no recollection of some songs from the latter part of the 2000s. I long for the days of Trains, Drops of Jupiter, Stay Solid, Hail State.
Wow.
That is Bizarro Tyler in Nashville with a monster of a question here, Daniel. Where are you at right now?
Longing for the days of Drops of Jupiter is both brave and telling.
Where are you at with the current state of affairs in pop music?
I'm like, there are occasional songs that will somehow cross in front of my face. And I'm like, all right, that's great. And just pure like top 40 pop, like the, Camila Cabello? I don't know. Like that crossed in front of me. I was like, all right, this is great. I can't argue. Like some early T Swift, great. But I don't know what it is that I was just like, I can't. There's a certain sound, and I only really listen to this music when I'm home and driving in a car, because I don't drive in a car in New York. So I come across top 40 radio only once every few months. And it sounds like every song, this is old man Dan speaking. There's like an effect. I don't know if you know what like Logic effect that these guys and ladies, whatever, are working with, these producers in Logic, in whatever, in Pro Tools, where it just makes every song sort of sound the same. They don't sound bad.
Right.
But there is that sheen where I'm just like, this sounds like this person, but it fully couldn't be. Like I just get lost and I give up, and I go to an oldies station, and the oldies station in California, in LA, will play Hey Ya, Ty.
Yeah.
It will play some Outkast if you want to feel ancient.
All right.
So it's been in terms of the year, I would say since 2014, I've pretty much opted out of pop music.
I'm having a real hard time trying
to
stay.
Love it. You commute with it.
I'm trying to commute more with it.
Yeah.
I find myself listening to older person stuff.
Sure.
On the drive home. And I've had to recommit myself to be the pop music encyclopedia of this podcast.
Yes, always.
What about Khalid? Have you heard of Khalid?
I have. And that is only because our friend Richard Johnson told me he gets it a lot that he looks like, is Khalid or is it Khalid?
Oh, you know what? God, I see it. You're right.
Years old.
I didn't even think of that.
The hair is very similar. The build is very similar, and the hair is very similar.
I haven't heard Richard sing, but at least
Richard has a good voice.
Yeah.
Richard has a legitimately good voice. There's something in the like Ariana Grande phylum. And I Ariana Grande seems fine to me. Seems like she has a good voice, bunch of hit songs. I don't know like three of them, but that there is a lot of Diet Grande out there.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Sure.
There's a lot of people who are saying, okay, I see that sound. And I mean, that's music. You can look at the history of music and there's that. But I feel like we are in the Diet Grande era.
I think Selena Gomez would be in the Diet Grande era.
Diet Grande.
I don't know if she's singing anymore.
Who sings on the middle? The non-Jimmy Eat World middle?
That'd be Maren Morris?
Would you say that there's Diet Grande to Maren Morris?
A little bit.
Maybe a little tangential. Maybe it's Grande Zero.
Yeah, something like that.
Maybe it's caffeine-free Grande Zero.
Yeah, okay.
So yes, my answer would be 2014. Since early Ariana Grande, whenever that was.
Fair.
And it's just because I'm 1,000 years.
For me, it's been about the last 2 years where I've really fallen out of touch. And I'm trying, Tyler, my very best to get back on the level here.
What will you listen to when you're like, I am in a music mood? When you're, I assume you listen to satellite radio still.
Sure.
What station? What genre? What are you going in that direction?
I go Pop Rocks Channel 17, and it's all music.
That's the current
stuff.
No,
it's all music from our high school and college days. Really,
Seether, Fuel, Switchback.
No, it's nothing that hard. It's a lot of pop stuff.
You're not sending the pain below, is what you're telling me.
No.
Okay.
Let's do two more questions here.
Okay. It's more love below than send the pain below.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
Let's go to Toon Squad.
Okay.
What is the proper tipping protocol at the following? One, restaurants where you order at the front, but have food brought to you. And two, buffets where the server brings you your drink.
So what to you, this, I mean, begs another question. And I am pro-tipping. I am pro-service industry. It's a tough job. I've worked in food service, whatever. I appreciate them. What to you sort of earns a really good tip? And that means like 20% over 20%.
Well, obviously, you got to be responsive.
Yep.
Got to be responsive. Not too in-your-face responsive, but responsive enough. And you got to have a personality.
Interesting.
I had a guy one time at an airport bar telling jokes about Seinfeld, making human fun jokes. He got That's like rough. 30%.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I don't want routines. I don't.
Was telling human fun jokes, which connects with me.
Scratches
so, yeah,
you
where you itch. I went above and beyond on that tip.
I want water circulation to be elite. I want somebody coming around with water all the time. If it's full service and he's asking questions, or he or she, Toon Squad, for restaurants at the front where his food is brought to you, I'll leave a couple bucks if it's very clear that the people bringing the food are only runners and they're not also making the food, or they're not also helping people, that kind of thing. If they're only sort of runners all the time, that's not a huge service. But that, it depends on that the specific role of the person bringing it out. A buffet, I would imagine the people bringing out the drinks are doing more than just drinks. Like, they're helping set up the buffet and keep things going and communicating that, like, yes, we need more enchiladas. Yes, we need more mac and cheese, whatever. But it's not like I'm scoping. I'm not scouting the situation. But I'll leave a pretty standard tip if the water is refilled, if the drinks are, if everything comes in a timely manner and they're pleasant, whatever. I'll give my standard tip.
Okay.
Which is about 20%. But yeah, we're talking full service, what gets a good tip is elite water circulation. It's definitely not trying to memorize orders. Even if they get it right, there's a certain amount of hubris where I'm like, come on, what are we doing? Just placate me and write it down. I don't need you to show off that you can memorize something. Even if you can,
right,
don't do that. I'm just totally out on that. And then I want, especially because Jody with an I, she's indecisive. And so she'll say something like, what's better, the roast chicken or the fettuccine? Like, she will give them options. And I like decisiveness from a waiter saying, well, the roast chicken's pretty spicy, so if you're into that, I'd go with that. The fettuccine's great, but it's, you know, it's more of a mellow type thing. If a waiter or waitress server, excuse me, is good on that level,
right,
I think that's a big plus, especially if it turns out that they like really nailed the wreck. I also love a good honest wreck where you're like, how's the salmon? You're like, it's fine, not my favorite. Like, I like that sort of honesty.
So you prefer more guidance in terms of food versus my
I don't necessarily, correct. Yeah, okay. I want it's all business. I want all business and I want their expertise on the menu.
Here's a good question from Joey.
Yeah.
Since it's starting to warm up in the Midwest, when you have sunglasses with you but don't need to wear them, what is the ideal on-the-body storage area?
Oh, what a question.
Above the forehead exposes them to sweat and grease, but I've never been a fan of the V-neck look that comes along with glasses pulling down your collar. Any pocket just increases the risk of something smashing. Thanks, I'll hang up and listen. This is really a question for an entire generation, Dan.
This is a question for Shark Tank.
What do you typically do? You're a sunglasses guy. In all honesty, I have pondered this question for eons to the extent that I don't even bring sunglasses with me unless it's required.
What?
I had the same scenario a couple weeks ago.
Animal.
When I went down to Philly's opening day, I left the sunglasses in the car. I didn't want to have to deal with them. I didn't know what to do with them.
Monster.
So I left them in the car. I don't have an answer here, Dan.
Okay, so I am regularly the V-neck, like even if I'm wearing a crew neck shirt and it becomes a V-neck because you fold the sunglasses at the lip of the collar or whatever. And that's just how I go about my life. I try more and more if I'm wearing a button down or a polo shirt or something like that, which I'm doing half the time-ish, who knows, to get one with a breast pocket. And okay. I will go with the breast pocket. Look, I'm a dad now. I can get away with it.
Sure.
And at least that gives me a little bit more security. But the number of times where I've bent over and my sunglasses have fallen off of my shirt or out of the shirt pocket is endless.
Yeah.
So I will not go the forehead look. I don't wear hats really, so that's not like putting it on. I definitely won't go back of the head.
Yeah.
I won't do the full Fieri tie.
I don't know how you do that. Yeah.
I don't do a forehead. I don't go on top of my hair. So I am looking for somebody in the Shark Tank realm, some entrepreneur, to come up with like a shirt brand that has a hidden magnet in the breast pocket or right. inside the sort of collar area where that it really gets a good amount of traction for the sunglasses. That I'm all in on. Some sort of universe where we have magnets. I mean, it all comes down to magnets.
Science, yeah, I mean, and the thing is, if you're wearing a collared shirt with a button down, mm-hmm. you can get away with putting it there in the collar. But if you're yeah. wearing a t-shirt, if it's just a casual get together, if you try to put the sunglasses at the bottom of the collar, it turns into one way or another a very aggressive V-neck.
You really don't wear sunglasses when you go to outdoor events in the sun?
I don't know what to do with the sunglasses.
Do you wear sunglasses when you go birding?
No.
You have a weird vision thing as well.
I wear sunglasses when I drive, but I don't like to take them out because I don't know what to do with them when I have to take them off.
You can't go pants or short pocket. He's definitely right
I've tried the thing where I try to put one arm in the pocket and just let them hang out, but that's a recipe for disaster. You end up losing them or dropping them and then stepping on them.
Are you going to put them back in a case and put them in your back pocket, but then sitting down becomes a thing, becomes uncomfortable? I don't know. I think the V-neck transformation, I think the breast pocket is the best answer, but I don't know how we can better secure. Again, I'm going to turn to people on Shark Tank.
All right. Final question here, Dan.
Yeah.
Comes to us from our friend RJ. He says, love mm-hmm. the show. My fiance yes. and I are moving to Phoenix in a few months. How do I convince her that buying Arizona State season tickets is a good / worthwhile investment? He uses the word investment.
Yeah.
It's a tough sell if you're going to present it as an investment. So I think you need to shift the narrative a little bit. It's not an investment. You're investing in experience.
Correct.
All right. So that's the first, I think, tact you need to take here, RJ. Now, Dan, you've been to more ASU games than I have. What is that game day experience like?
It's a good time. Early on in the season, all the home games are at night because of how hot September is. So you still get to watch some of the early games. I don't know what time zone Arizona is in the fall. I know it can vary or it never varies, whatever it is. You get time to do whatever you want to do on Saturday, as is. So if you have errands to run, it's not like you're ruining your Saturday by getting to the tailgate at 9 a.m. You know, you're there for 4 hours and the game lasts three more hours. It's much more of like, okay, it's a 7:30 kickoff. We can take care of whatever during the day, during the morning hours, and then go a couple hours before. I don't think people are tailgating like 10 hours all day before ASU games. There's right. a huge parking lot, so you don't have to deal with huge or the pain of finding side streets and people charging you $50 to park, per my knowledge. Maybe it's changed. So the social element, I think you're right. It's the experience. Yeah. Even if ASU is perennially just a Pac-12 South threat and nothing beyond that, you're going to a night game in Arizona. It gets a little chilly, so it's a nice break from the heat of September, usually, by the end of the month anyway.
Sun Devil Stadium's a cool venue.
A lot of metal benches, though, that don't feel great in the heat.
But a cool venue.
Yes,
I think it's a neat place to see a game. The other thing I'd add here, it's not like you're moving to Philly and trying to convince someone for Penn State season tickets. Phoenix is right next door to Tempe.
Also, if you are moving to Phoenix from wherever, college football and tailgating is a nice way to meet new people, to meet locals that are presumably also interested in things you're interested in, college football. And it's a big social experience where you make new friends. Tossing a football around, somebody's making crab dip. I don't know what people make at ASU games. You're smoking beef ribs, whatever. it's a good way to be like, oh, wow, that looks incredible. Is it good? And they're like, yeah, try some. And then you're friends. You're great. You're joining a kickball league together.
The other thing I'd add, and this is, I think, the final point on this matter.
Mm-hmm.
I think you, RJ, first need to approach it as an experience that you're selling, the atmosphere that you want to be a part of now as you move to a new city. If that does not work and you are still dead set and determined to try and sell your new wife on this matter, you need to do this with a straight face. It's the only way it's going to work. You need to try and sell her on the fact that you are buying in and with your money voting for a new model of college football led by one Herman Edwards.
That's true. ASU was fine last year.
A new model. You can support a new model. You can upend the system. You got to do it with a straight face.
Correct.
But that's the Hail Mary.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be the big sell. I don't know how much Herm Edwards has a big name for somebody possibly not interested in ASU season tickets, but
it's a read option, Dan. You put experience. You put experience in the belly. If she doesn't take it, you got to opt for investment, and that investment opportunity is the new model of college football, led by one Herman Edwards.
How can I argue that point?
All right, we got a bunch of other questions here that we could not get to. But we're doing these Q&As every month now. So there's a new one coming in May. We've got a bunch of stuff that we're going to try and address here over the next few weeks. Obviously, spring football going on around the country. We'll talk in a little bit of detail about that. Some notable things that might pop up as we go through those. Also, the NFL draft coming up. Now, we're not big on the NFL, as we mentioned last week. But certainly, as some of our favorite players go forth and prosper in the league, that is something that a lot of college football fans are particularly interested in. So where's a guy like Kyler Murray going to go? Dwayne Haskins, where are some of those big-time defensive linemen from Clemson going to go? We're going to bring someone on the program here to talk a little bit more about the NFL draft. So some stuff coming up here the next few weeks that you as a college football fan might want to pay close attention to.
That person, Marin Morris. Is that the right name?
Sure.
That'd be great. Combine two of our interests.
All right, Daniel. So you are making the North American baby tour right now. You are in Southern California. Next week when we talk, you'll be Chicago?
Next time we speak, I will be in Chicago. The Chicago Burbs, for sure.
All right. Well, you take care. Enjoy showing off the little man. And keep us updated on his progress, okay?
Done. Will do. He's tall, poops consistently, and he smiles a lot. He does smile a good amount now. Yeah,
excellent.
It's pretty good.
On that note, for that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, we will catch you all in a week. In the meantime, enjoy your week, enjoy your weekend, and stay solid.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.